What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode here on the Smack Hospitality Podcast. And this episode features Fahad Abdulrahim Kasim, the CEO of Millennium Hotels and Resorts Middle East and Africa. Fahad and I sat down together during the Future Hospitality Summit in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and we talked about the buzz that is currently going on around Saudi Arabia's tourism ambitions, what that means for the culture and heritage of not only Saudi Arabia, but the entire region, and the plans of Millennium Hotels and Resorts Middle East and Africa in the upcoming months and years. Enjoy the show. Perfect. Okay, Fahad, let's kick things off. Thank you, first and foremost, thank you for doing this and for taking the time. I realize it's a busy time of the year. It's FHS as well, and there's a million things going on. I'm going to start with a very easy one, and I was curious to ask you about this because I wanted to hear, as somebody who's been in the region for a while, if you had to explain what's going on in Saudi at the moment to someone who's got no idea. Give me a couple of sentences of how we could put this into perspective. Just the sheer excitement, I guess, is one word. The magnitude of what's going on, and maybe kind of tie that into what you guys are seeing at Millennium as well.
I guess the easiest way to explain this is probably going back to California during the gold rush.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of excitement, I think. I'll speak from a region perspective before coming down into more micro Saudi perspective. But from a regional perspective, there's a lot of excitement. Saudi is a very important player in the region. It has a very strong presence in the region. And I'm talking purely now just from a location point of view, from a neighboring point of view, being a part of the Gulf Cooperation Council, and so on and so forth. It has a very strategic role that it plays. And for the longest time, a lot of the focus remained on the older sectors of oil and gas, and probably on the political level, rather than just focusing on a lot of the growth that can come through and diversifying it through different sectors, different demographics, and so on and so forth. So what happened is, once they started opening up and when they started putting together the Vision 2030, it just brought a lot of excitement in the region, right? It showed the potential of what could be done to a region that has in certain ways been slower to expand, grow, and flourish. So that brought excitement on its own. Then you started reading into the details of Vision 2030, and you saw how meticulously thought through it was in putting together a vision of what they need to do and how they need to expand out, and what are the sectors that they want to focus on, how do they take advantage of this beautiful landscape that is the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. What can you do in terms of not just focusing on what has been in the past, your sun and sand tourism and your shopping tourism and leisure tourism. No, but how can you take advantage of the historical sites? How do you take advantage of the rich, deep culture that this region have and make that as a selling point? How do you take advantage of the different landscapes that they do have as well? And of course, how do you enhance what was already a strong tourism segment for them, which was the religious tourism? How do you expand that? How do you make it more open to the public? So it brought in a lot of excitement. And of course, now going back to Millennium, for us, we're in the hospitality business, right? And we like to think of ourselves as a global brand, yet with a very rich, strong regional presence and experience. So when we saw with what's happening in Saudi, it brought in a lot of excitement in what is it that we can do to add to what they are doing, to add to the strong strategy that they've set forward, and to add to and be a small part of that growth story as well.
I'm going to ask a question on that because, I'm interested to hear, especially your thought on a as a player who's deeply rooted in the region for a while. Right, the region is not new to you at all. With the buzz that's going on around KSA and you know and the region in general, there's it's obviously drawn a lot of attention. It's also drawn in competition for sure. Can you compare for me, because I can imagine the answer, but I want to hear it from you. Can you compare for me what it was like doing business in the Middle East 10 years ago as a hospitality and hotel operator as opposed to now? Because I imagine now it must be the Wild West sometimes when you sit in some of these projects and so on and so forth. Because where at the time there was perhaps two or three of you as competitors, and then now there's, I don't know, 20 guys and girls competing for one project. Walk me through how that has changed the way of doing business.
The easiest and best way to put this is it keeps us on our toes, right? We are not here selling cookie cutter products anymore. And I think what would have worked 10 years ago, you would just go into projects with the strength of a brand, and you would just put it in front and you would expect more or less an owner to sign off on. That's no longer the case, and which is a great thing for the industry, you know. Makes our lives more difficult.
And for the guest as well, I imagine, right?
That's exactly it. So if now I go to an owner, I'm going with a proposition. I understand what the project needs, what the wider community needs, and what the wider development needs. So you start putting all of those together. Rather than just focusing on, well, I need 250 keys and I need two restaurants and I need a gym and a spa, you know. So we need to start thinking deeper. So to your point, this then translates to the guest experience. I'm no longer just operating a room and just opening the doors and expecting the hotel to be full and to have guests just lining out the door to come in. Guests have choices. And if guests have choices, I need to stand out with the competition that I'm, the hotels I'm competing against. So for that, I need to make sure that I just take care of not only the hardware, the physical build, but really take care of the software. I really understand what my guest is looking for. Are they looking for a dining experience that's unique? Are they looking for a story that's different? Are they looking for that personal interaction with our colleagues on the floor? A lot of these little details that we take into consideration. I'll just give you a small example of how we've tried to intertwine all this into what we're trying to do. When I go to retail, in any international city, I have these international brands that I can buy. But as a guest, is that what I'm looking for? When I'm going to a place...
Probably not anymore, right?
Not anymore. I want to get something that's local. You know, I want to interact with an SME that I'll probably have no access to once I leave this country, this city. I want to understand what is it that they're doing, right? That little different hip happening scene that only an SME can bring. That experience that is lacking otherwise, right? When I go to the all-day dining for breakfast, do I just want the plain old croissant with the eggs benedict and the fruit? No, I want to see what the local breakfast looks like. I want to see what the local produce tastes like. I want to get a honey that is only found in the southern part of Saudi, which has certain health benefits and which has a story behind it. That's what the guest is looking for today. So for us to be able to intertwine all that into an experience is where the challenge lies, as well as where the beauty lies.
Opportunities lie, yeah. You can't imagine how many times the poor croissant has been mentioned when it comes to standardization. I mean, I think it's one of the most bullied food items in the world at the moment. But I understand.
I love my croissant.
I say,
so I love my almond
or
pistachio croissant.
We all do. We all do. Let me pick up on that, because to the point of... individualizing the experience, if we want to call it that. Something that you guys have been focused on, and I was fortunate enough to listen in on some of the things that you said on stage here at the FHS event in Saudi earlier, was the whole idea of sustainability. Now, be very careful with that word, because I know that it's probably one of the most used terms, and you know, when we look down at it, we can probably all agree as an industry we're still not where we want to be, but
correct.
we're making progress in that thing. And you talked about something which I thought was a great sentence. You said, quote-unquote, not just a box-ticking exercise.
Correct.
And I read some things about, you know, what you guys do, the whole idea of the Green Path, Millennium's Green Path, and so on and so forth. Walk me through... I'm not going to get you to break down your sustainability initiatives, because I'm sure there's plenty, but walk me through how that process has changed as well, and that becoming, and again, something we've, you know, talked about in the industry for years, is now slowly coming into effect, where that's becoming a USP, and people are, you know, are asking a question more about this, travelers and owners as well, I would imagine, than they previously have.
Correct.
How has that been for you guys specifically, and is there something there that we can, or is this something that we can expect to get more and more? Do you think this will plateau to a certain extent? Because at the end of the day, it is still a numbers game. We, as much as we talk about sustainability, part of the rules, right?
Of course.
What are your thoughts on that?
I'll tell you where we started with when it came to our sustainability journey. Sustainability for us, again, like you said, right? It wasn't a box-ticking exercise from many different ways. I wanted to make sure when we do something, we truly believe in it. I did not want it to be a numbers game. I did not want us to just have this checklist of saying we are here and we need to get to there. We have this and we don't have that. I wanted us to really go down to the nitty-gritty and understand what is it, what impact are we making on the environment, and what are the small steps, reasonably doable steps that we can do to start us off in this journey. So, for instance, one thing that I heard a lot about, and don't get me wrong, it is something that we're doing, but we heard that we're going to be zero plastic in the next 2 months. For us, and I'll be completely brutally honest over here, we knew that that's not something that's achievable. I need to be on a journey because I am not the be-all, end-all in all the properties. I have owners that I need to go back to. I need to get their buy-in. I need to make sure that I have inventory in the back I need to take care of. So it's a journey that we
it's
started.
A process.
It's a process. It's a process, but we knew what the end goal looks like, right? And what we need to get to. But how we get there, we drew out a beautiful path that was very achievable in the right amount of time that's needed. We get all the buy-ins from all the different stakeholders to make sure everyone's on board to be able to do that. So this was the first thing that got us going. On the other side, and I always say this, when it comes to water and energy, these are non-negotiables. Technology is there today that will assist you, that will have strong ROIs as they are. So this is not a conversation that you can always go back and say, well, the owners will not accept. No, today every owner, if you show an ROI on investment, they'll be the first ones to sign on. So these are the type of things that we started looking at from that perspective. Then we started doing things that felt good. Doing things that really brought a smile to all of our faces, which is buying local, interacting with local farmers, making them part of the community, making them part of our procurement platforms. And these are things that are very easy to do. It takes a lot of effort because it's single farmers that are selling a very specific kind of produce. But in the bigger, grander scheme, there are solutions for you to find that. So we partnered with a company called Watermelon. This is a procurement platform that took all that headache away from us, made sure that we get the quality standards ticked, make sure we get the commercials ticked. We're not paying over what we used to pay as a basket. And make sure that we have continuity in our supply chain as well. So we found solutions that made sure that we are able to cater to that agenda that we set out to achieve. On the back of all this, of course, there is the savings that come on the CO2 emissions that is tremendous across the supply chain, the logistical supply chain of buying local, right? Versus vis-a-vis buying from abroad. On top of this, we reduce the food wastage that comes within the supply chain as well. So now when it comes to food wastage, hospitality industry has the highest food wastage in probably compared to any other sector. So this also starts feeding into that point over there. And we have another agenda on food wastage specifically. I'll get into in a bit. But this is just buying local. So then starts ticking boxes, right? You start feeding into the community. You start buying local. You have a great storytelling potential behind it. Guests love the story. We're able to, in certain properties, we actually take them to the farms. We take guests to the farms.
Super cool. Yeah.
So it becomes a beautiful experience that everyone can be a part of. So going back to food wastage, then we started looking at that. I was like, what are other type of wastages that we have and how can we tackle it? We came across food wastage. So food wastage is quite big. It becomes between 40 to 60% of any wastage in the hotels is food wastage. We started looking at composting solutions. And the amount of service providers are out there that are ready and willing to take that food waste and turn it into compost and take it to some of these local farms. Now we are starting to close that chain.
Have a cycle. Yeah. Right?
It's a beautiful life cycle that we're starting to create. Same with the cooking oil. Cooking oil can be very hazardous and its disposal is quite costly. So we started looking at converting that into biofuel. And again, that became a commercial opportunity rather than just fitting in our sustainability agenda. It became a commercial opportunity as well. So I always say, if you have the right mindset and you have the right intentions, all these issues and constraints become opportunities. Mm-hmm. And fortunately enough, I have I've been blessed with a great team that have and share the same passion that I do around sustainability. So whenever we come and talk about all these initiatives that we're doing, they are on board and they're the first one that are signing up to these initiatives. They're the first one that are really pushing through and volunteering to take these things forward.
And do you know what's interesting? I feel like the way that you guys do it over here in the Middle East sometimes has just that extra bit of heart, and you know, you guys, you know, you live and breathe the initiatives, and I want to kind of twist the conversation that way and talk to you about the you know, what you make of this, because I think we can all agree, and anybody that's ever been to the region can agree, that, you know, culture and heritage is something that's a major factor over here, not just in Saudi, also in the UAE, in Oman, in Qatar, wherever you go.
Correct.
Right? I feel like I can get away with asking this as a European. I'm going to ask you, are there too many people trying to get involved with your culture at the moment from a travel perspective? And I mean this in the most honorable senses that I possibly can, because the world is clearly paying attention to what you guys are doing politically, but also and specifically hospitality wise. You are you set an example in many ways in hospitality. Is there a risk, in your opinion, in losing some of that culture aspect? And you know, because the more people come from outside the world, the more, you know, we might feel like, okay, can we get my European French toast, please? And I love the French, so no harm there at all. But you see where I'm going with this, right? Is there a risk here of losing some of that culture and heritage aspect?
I think, again, with hospitality and looking at anywhere else in the world, right, it's finding that right balance between the two.
Both, yeah.
If we go back 10, 15, 20 years, I think the name of the game was standardization. Everyone wanted to standardize. You know, we were setting brand standards, and these brand standards were gospels.
SOPs, do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
We love those. Yeah.
And as a consultant in my previous life, I made a living out of SOPs. So
you know,
so
a thing or two about them.
I'm not
going
to knock it. but today, I think, and maybe it's truer post-COVID, people are looking for experiences. They want different experiences. They want to go somewhere and get that authentic experience. And you cannot fake authenticity. And if the only way to be true to what you're serving is if you have that right ingredients that help you on the way. It happens from the people that you employ. And you cannot fake a good service.
Sure. Yeah.
Colleagues of ours have to have a smile on their face to be able to serve the guests. And they have to understand and live and breathe that experience that you want to give, that authentic experience that you want to give, rather than being taught in a closed workshop of a week or two and that this is what the authentic experience is. It will never come through. And guests today know that and feel that and find that out. So that's where our focus has been, on making sure that let's make sure anything that we can do, anything that we can deliver on, we focus on that.
Yeah.
And that authenticity will come from the product
from
that
the
we're
process.
Trying to sell.
Okay. Yeah. Very clear. Let's move away from the general topics, and I want to talk about you And I want to talk about kind of your role and your journey.
That'll be a boring conversation.
No, it won't. Don't say that. No, I know it won't because I've done my research. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you because hospitality was not your first
correct.
Your first love, shall we call it that, from a professional work life standpoint? I would love to hear from a previous consultant. How did you find out about hospitality, and then what drew you into the career that you're doing now, and kind of how did that process come along? Was it something that happened because of what's happening in the Middle East in general? That, you know, tourism is obviously become a major factor. How did that, walk me through the Fahad story?
It is a long drawn out story, and the journey to hospitality was really interesting. Exciting, at least for me. I think this is, I found my true calling. But when I first started, I started out as an accountant, mm-hmm. you know, far, far away from the world of hospitality. But even then, so I was working in an auditing firm, and my first or second client was one of the local hospitality chains.
Ah, okay.
And it always intrigued me, right? I was looking at it from a very financial perspective. And again, in audit, you're always looking at it from a historical financial perspective.
Looking back at the numbers, yeah.
But it got me thinking how this sector really reflects what's happening in the country, the city that you're in, right? So you start looking at the inbound numbers that are coming through. It reflects the tastes and needs of the guests. It reflects the different types of things that sell that they don't sell. It was just something that was very exciting and interesting to me. And while I had started there, I moved even further and further away from hospitality and delved really deep into the world of audit. And in 6-7 years down the line, I said, you know what, I want to get a taste of industry. And interestingly enough, even when I wanted to get a taste of industry, it wasn't in the world of real estate or hospitality or anything close to it. I wanted to go to the world of investments. And again, of course, sometimes we don't write our own scripts, and there's a greater being that has your faith
in
his
hands. Yeah.
The global financial crisis happened in 2008. A lot of things that were happening in this region started course correcting in a way, changing course in a way, bringing different perspectives in a way. So the organization I was with was a subsidiary of a bigger holding company. And I moved to the holding company and started looking at restructuring. And we started looking at restructuring around the real estate vertical. Bigger place still. I'm still a macro view away. And it took us a couple of years. We cleaned out. And it was, again, I always never regret an experience, never regret anything I do. You learn from everything, that curveball that life throws at you, right? So went, did that for a number of years. And we started looking at what is next for that organization. And what was next was working around lifestyle.
Okay.
Lifestyle developments.
Okay.
Dubai was built on these mega, biggest, tallest, largest, roundest, whatever it is, right? Yeah. We started changing course and focused around lifestyle developments. And a very essential component of lifestyle developments was hospitality. So I really started doing a lot of research of what is missing in the world of hospitality in this region. What do we want to bring? What direction do we want to take? It's not all about luxury. Luxury is important. It has its segment. It has its needs and demands. But there's also so much more that we can offer. So literally, I had a spreadsheet. Again, the accounting in me doesn't come out.
Doesn't leave you. Yeah.
And listed all these different brands that are out there, number of properties that they operate, where they operate, what is their USP. And we started targeting and bringing them across. And successfully, we brought a few. We developed developments around those few. We had in that organization a very small management company that was running these chalets, you know, and they were beautiful. It was again a very rugged experience, chalet experience, but it was a beautiful experience, and they did extremely well. Fast forward a few years took a very, very short stint back in the world of consulting. And I realized my true calling is in the world of hospitality.
Got him.
And that's where I, like I told you, it's a slightly boring story, but here I am.
No, but it's a great story. It's a great story. I'm going to pick up on two things from that story, Bert, because I want your opinion on this, and that's the whole idea of branding, especially here in the Middle East. I realize from the conversations I've had, not just here at this event, but over the course of the last couple of months, that it's a very interesting story, and there's a big conversation going around it. I feel, especially at the moment of where this is going. Walk me through what you guys have seen. Obviously, there's multiple brands that you work with within Millennium. So, we're not going to have time to touch on all of them. But walk me through kind of what you've seen. Are people drawn more to brands? Is the whole idea of loyalty as drawn to brands perhaps as it is in the US? Is it a little bit less? How do you see that? And again, specifically for this region here, because I feel like there is a difference there as opposed to, because you know, local tourism, sometimes in my opinion, very underestimated here in the Middle East, is a big thing. How do you see this whole idea of brand and loyalty currently and perhaps developing?
So if I look at Saudi as a market, right?
Yeah.
Saudi has over 100 million tourists already.
Yeah.
Their 2030 goal has been surpassed in 2023.
Yeah.
70% of that is domestic.
Local. Mm.
If you look at that, they're not drawn just to the brands, right? They're drawn to experiences. They want to go to different cities. They go there for the weather. They go there for the landscape. They go there for the greenery. They go there for the desert experience. They go there for multiple reasons. When it comes to that, it's about having something that is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is where we start focusing on how do you create something different. If you go to the other 30%, you'll have a mishmash of both. You will have some that are focused on the brand names that they're well they're familiar with. Yeah, yeah. You know, they have expectations. They want the cookie cutter. It works for them. Not to say that our products are cookie cutter, but at least the expectations are there. They know what they're going to get in a Grand Millennium versus a M Social.
Sure.
Versus a Copthorne.
Yeah.
So that expectations is already set from the beginning. But even when it comes to the quote-unquote more traditional developments and more traditional destinations, we're seeing the need and requirement for that adaptability. And when it comes to that local adaptability, we can do it to a certain extent to some of the brands, but in a lot of times, we need to start thinking outside of the box and coming up with new brands.
Mm.
So one of the journeys we're on right now is, apart from our 11 established brands the Millennium umbrella, we're looking at creating a few new ones. So we created the Agrawood brand, and Agrawood, we signed our first property in Mauritius as an example.
Yeah.
And we're pushing that out. That becomes a brand that is an eco-resort brand that also encapsulates the wellness aspect. So it gives us an opportunity to understand, keep our ears close to the ground, understand what the market is asking for, understand what our guests are asking for, and then come up with something that will more closely resemble that.
It's super interesting, and I'm gonna challenge you a little bit here. There's obviously a narrative going around to some extent in the business, and probably especially in the more global sense, that you know there's a risk of us having too many brands eventually, and rightly so. And yet, the ones that are doing a good job, and I will compliment you here. You're just gonna have to indulge me. The ones that are doing a good job in the process still find a way to add a brand if it's necessary, if it fits demand and so on and so forth. Do you reckon, very provocative question, do you reckon we will sit in a time at some point, maybe 2, maybe 5, maybe 10 years down the road, where perhaps companies like yours, perhaps bigger ones, perhaps smaller ones, will also shut down brands because they realize it's no longer relevant, there's no longer market for this? Or are we always going to see this idea of repositioning a brand? And how often can you reposition a brand? If Brand X is repositioned for the 5th time in 2 years, I think we can agree there's probably a deeper rooted problem there, right? Are we coming to a point where this perhaps turns into a cycle, this whole idea of brand in hospitality? Or do you think there is still so much room for so much new stuff and so many new brands and narratives that go with that, that we're not nearly close to the end?
First of all, challenge accepted.
Okay, thank you. I'll come back in a year and you let me know how you've done.
Okay. I think from a broader perspective, we're not talking about the brand as we used to know it traditionally. I think there is going to be disruption around that. Going forward, I think what the brand will bring to us is more of the back-end support that comes to it, rather than having these standards, having these cookie-cutter products, having these, you know, like you said, the SOPs that we have to stick by. What's going to happen is, going forward, we're going to see that we're going to have a lot more individual assets that are collectively managed by strong back-end support. Mm-hmm. So what we know today as, I'll speak about ourselves, as a millennium, will not be the millennium that you know in the future.
Yeah.
Millennium will be more about the consistency of service, more about the sales distribution network, more about that guest experience. But from a product perspective, there'll be a lot more diversity. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, again, our research shows us, is the boutique hotels have gained a lot of traction recently. Sure. And why have they gained traction? They've gained traction because they're different. Mm. So guests expect different.
Yeah.
So that's why I go and say that the brands become less important. The experience takes over.
Yeah.
But at least knowing that familiarity with who's behind this experience gives that sense of assurance.
Sure, sure. But just like that, 30 minutes have passed, and I'll slowly make my way to the end here. I'm going to ask one longer question and then two short ones with the request for short but challenging ones. So I'll start with the longer one. If you just touched on the future a little bit in the last half an hour, but if you had to guess or predict the future, and I realize we don't, you know, nobody has the glass ball and can say what's going to happen, but if you had to guess the next 2 years in Saudi specifically, what are we going to see?
What we're going to see is stabilization of the market. We'll get a better understanding of a lot of the noise that we heard. Once they start coming into reality, we're going to start seeing these beautiful experiences starting to come out. Mm-hmm. Dar'iyah, for instance, beautiful development that is built around culture. Fantastic on the plans. But once you start experiencing it and going to these destinations, you will see the value that's being created. Qadiyah, again, that entertainment angle that's being pushed. Once you start putting all these different elements together, and we're still at the cusp of what potential Saudi has. The number of tourists, again, we're talking about 30 million tourists coming in from outside of Saudi. That's a very small number compared to where Saudi can reach. This is not even taking Neom into consideration. Al Ula, going down to Amaya, Red Sea development, the new development that has been announced in Jizan, and going towards the eastern province. The potential is massive. So over the next few years, people will start getting more familiar with the experiences. People will start getting more familiar with what Saudi tourism has to offer. And you'll start the numbers. You'll see the numbers starting to spike up. So this is one element that I see. The other thing that I see is because Saudi has started the push on all these different giga projects at a later date than many, it has a lot of advantages that can come on the back of this. They're building sustainability, as an example, into these developments. They're building technology into these developments. So the combination of the experiences and the things that you can change, the landscape that's around you, with the sustainability and the technology angle, creates a very strong proposition. And this is what people will start seeing more of.
That was a breath of fresh air. I'm going to ask you three quick questions, and we'll see how you do on the answers. They're very challenging. I'll start with the first one. A place on the planet that gets far too little recognition for its beauty.
Oh, wow. Just one place.
I'm here for the hard stuff. I mean, just no easy questions on Smack.
Honestly, for me, I love traveling. I love seeing.
Doesn't have to be Middle East, by the way. You can go anywhere in the world.
And that's the beauty of the world that we live in
that
today.
Is.
It's become so much closer than it used to be.
Right.
I can give you 10 answers and still not cover. But a recent experience I went to Norway. It was just stunning. It was such a beautiful experience. It was very different. The fjords and going through the fjords and experiencing that was beautiful. On the other side, when you look at more regional coming through the region, the beauty of it is in every single spot within the region, starting from Oman, working away all the way to the north of Saudi, the amount of landscape and beauty and adventure spots that you have is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to say, as much as I've covered it, I haven't done justice to it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come back to you on this.
Perfect.
Later on.
I'll take your word for it. Second question, a hotel that you absolutely love that is not part of your group.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what? I'll give you one that I stayed in very recently.
Okay.
I went to Da Nang in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And we stayed at the Intercon Sun Peninsula.
Yeah.
It was just stunning. Yeah. It was beautiful because the way that the hotel was built into the landscape around you was just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Experience was fantastic. And you know what? I'm not the type of person that always just would mention his own. I learn from a lot of the stays that I go to.
Yeah,
I learned
absolutely.
From a lot of these developments. And the amount of things that they had done well, it was, you know, it opened up my eyes into things that we can potentially look at incorporating within our own hotels as well.
And do better. Somebody, final question. Somebody in tourism we can all, or hospitality we can all learn from.
Tough questions.
Listen, the hard ones are coming at the end.
Fritz, I thought I'll come prepared for this, but from tourism that we can all learn from.
Somebody that's had an influence with you, doesn't have to be a C-level, can be somebody that you've learned from, somebody that's drawn you to hospitality.
I've been drawn to hospitality from many different people, but one person that really I admired and I felt had done a fantastic job was...
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm trying to go back in time on this. Actually, someone that I've met him over a number of years, and he's somewhat of a father figure when it comes to hospitality, and I look up to is Gerald Lawless.
Yes. Okay.
He started a brand out of nothing, created such a international appeal to, brought, especially at that time when probably Dubai was at as infancy within hospitality,
yeah.
created such a strong brand, till today resonates extremely well in the region. And with the tools that he had, to be able to create something is someone that I really admire.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate enough to meet from time to time and someone that I've learned a lot from.
Very good. That was a breath of fresh air. Thank you so much for your time.
Fritz, it was a pleasure.
I'll look back to connect at some point and we can continue the conversation and see how much of the predictions of Saudi and the region have happened and see where Millennium has gone by then. Thank you so much for your time, Parth.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. Thank you. Take care. That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.